This is a special occasion in parliamentary democracy.
Members on both sides.
Mr. Speaker, the Labor Party cannot be trusted.
I'd like to now address the House.
Mr. Harbourside Mansion.
Like a game of musical chairs, that's it.
Time to head back to the beating heart of our nation's democracy. I'm joined by David Crowe, Chief Political Correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. David, welcome.
Hey, Jonathan.
Huawei. Growing reports the federal government will block the Chinese telco giant from participating in the 5G network. Is this a done deal?
I don't think it's a done deal in the sense that there's no formal decision made. But at every stage, it looks less and less likely that Huawei could be in the running to build 5G networks here. The government's got legal powers that they legislated last year to tell telcos, look, don't use that particular kind of gear, go and use something else. So that legal power is there now. When Malcolm Turnbull went to the US and spoke to Donald Trump in late February, the message from the US authorities directly to the Prime Minister was don't use Huawei. So at every step, it looks like that's going to be the outcome. It would actually be very difficult for the government to allow Huawei to go ahead when there's a wide knowledge that the national security agencies take a very dim view of that. It would mean the Prime Minister going in a direction where he's going to get endless questions saying, why are you not paying attention to what ASIO is telling you?
What are we worried about? I mean, what's the anxiety? What could they build into that network that would trouble us?
In theory, you can build anything into devices at the chip level when you're not just selling somebody software, you're selling them chips where you've written the code onto those chips, the firmware. Now, in the UK, Huawei is a supplier to British Telecom, and the authorities there are so nervous about that they have a team of people from their equivalent of our Australian Signals Directorate or Security Directorate, ASD. GCHQ is the team in the UK, and they're checking the code that Huawei are building into the gear that they provide to British Telecom. So that's the kind of anxiety that you find among security agencies about what can be done with communications gear at the firmware level, where they could, in theory, take information and send it back to use it for the purposes of espionage.
It's a tricky thing. At a corporal level, there's already been a response. Now, the chairman of Huawei Australia, John Lord, he was on RN Breakfast this morning.
Government officials have raised no real concerns other than to seek for more information from us about the way 5G is being formed, its similarities to 4G, how Huawei intends to take 5G forward. So we're not really getting any concerns expressed to us at all, other than reports in the media.
That's an interesting thing, David Crowe. I mean, there's no sort of official approach to the company. Does that surprise you?
I guess it does surprise me in a sense, because the concerns have been well ventilated, often through the media, because journalists are talking to people who've got strong views on this issue. And I would have thought by now that there would have been some kind of signal from the government to the company. I guess we're in a stage where the government doesn't want to signal everything it's doing in a formal way, and it may be that the decision, as has happened before, will take Huawei by surprise, will cause consternation. That's what happened when Stephen Conroy, as communications minister, had to make a decision about whether Huawei would supply technology to the national broadband network, and the company was basically banned from that. And that caused a big outcry under that Labor government, because they listened to their national security agencies. It came out of the blue at that time. There was a bit of reporting about the concerns before a decision. In this case, it's a bit different. There's been quite widespread reporting, several reports saying Huawei was looking like they weren't going to get any 5G work. So the company should be reading between the lines, I think.
This, of course, all feeds into a difficult relationship with Beijing already, and it's not going to make that any better.
No, it was interesting earlier today, Craig Emerson, who was Trade Minister, I think, at the time of the NBN decision with Huawei, he was being interviewed, and he spoke quite frankly about the level of concern expressed by China to the Gillard government at that point, and how he had to, as a cabinet minister, try to soothe the issue. And it was very challenging, and I expect it to be just as challenging if things go as expected and Huawei does not get part of their 5G contracts. Now, bear in mind, these are commercial constructions of mobile networks. This is Telstra, Vodafone and Optus.
Yes.
But, and in a sense, those three telcos would rather have a competitive bidder in there to build the networks that they need. I did a story a few months ago where I reported that the US had expressed concerns to Malcolm Turnbull about Huawei, but I also reported that the message from the private sector is, look, if you knock out a bidder to build these networks, that could make the final bids more expensive and it could make the networks more expensive to build. So there definitely is a cost to be taken into account here.
Huawei, a big player with pretty sophisticated technology in this space. Talking politics, Fairfax's David Crow. Now, there's been a fair bit of confusion post President Trump's decision to cancel US-South Korean war games after the summit in Singapore. Here's Julie Bishop sounding a tad sceptical.
I don't know whether the president made it conditional on North Korea reaching certain milestones, but I would most certainly want to see verifiable, concrete steps taken by North Korea that showed it was genuine in its commitment to denuclearisation.
It's a tricky business, David Crow. This seems to have taken everybody by surprise, this sort of post-signing decision to can the war games.
Yes, it was basically indicated at Donald Trump's press conference after all the formalities in Singapore. And he was asked repeatedly about it in that lengthy press conference and justified it, saying, look, he couldn't go to a summit in Singapore to try to reach an agreement with Kim from North Korea, while at the same time sending off military forces to a military exercise. Mm. That was Donald Trump's justification. But that's a very clear expression of concern from Julie Bishop today. In fact, one of her quotes was that it was actually the wrong thing to do to take the... Well, she said, I would not be taking my foot off the throat of North Korea until I saw very concrete steps. I mean, that's strong language from Julie Bishop. And, of course, what's happened with the military exercises tends to go against what Trump supporters have been saying for several weeks, and in fact what Malcolm Turnbull said yesterday, that the pressure brought to bear by Donald Trump on North Korea was one of the reasons why there was progress being made. So if that's the case, and I think there's a general view that Donald Trump's pressure on North Korea did bear dividends here, if that's the case, why the
relax
pressure
it
here?
Yeah.
And so there is this Australian concern, I think, a justified concern that the military exercises are off. And at one point, Donald Trump, in that long press conference, said basically, look, those exercises were costing too much. Well, if that's his attitude, does that signal that, he worries too much about the cost of these exercises with allies in the Pacific, including us?
One quick last point, David Crow. One nation, now just two.
Oh, they're shrinking. They never had official party status. They were never that big. But they did have they had four senators at one point. But it's been, they've lost several now and they're down to two. Brian Burston has resigned. I think it's the way in which he's fallen out of the party that's going to raise a lot of questions for Pauline Hanson over the way she's running it, and it raises questions for members who may already be sceptical about what she's doing. Brian Burston, he disagreed on the company tax issue, and for that, disagreeing on a policy matter, she accused him of betraying her, stabbing her in the back. She tried to drum him out of the party. She wrote him a letter saying, you've got to go. He actually told me two weeks ago he wanted to stay in the party.
Mm.
He didn't want to have to resign, but he's got no option now, so he'll sit as an independent. That sends a message to other disaffected members of that party, people who had wanted to be candidates, where Pauline Hanson has decided, no, look, it's not going to be you, it's going to be my preferred candidate instead. Like every party, there are tensions within that group and there are differences of opinion about where they go. And I think that's the sort of the bigger significance of what Brian Burston's done.
David Crowe, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jonathan.
David Crowe, he's from Fairfax, talking politics. 17 minutes away from 7, this is RN Drive.